but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
You know, Steven had a birthday because he's throwing, like, it's a song you'd hear at a birthday party. I don't even know what that is. It's upbeat, though. I don't mind it. Energy's good. Our next guest, former basketball coach at Indiana, former basketball coach at Georgia, a guy at Marquette who went to a Final Four, won a couple of Big Ten regular season championships at ESPN as an analyst, brother-in-law to the Harbaughs. He married a Harbaugh. I shouldn't say brother-in-law to a Harbaugh. He married a Harbaugh. Tom Crean joining us. Punch him up. Steven, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I married the Harbaugh.
That's right.
I married the best one.
And, I know, because
I'm with
no, go
her
ahead.
Mom and dad are here right now. Her mom and dad are here right now in Florida. So we're eating at a restaurant called Prococo's, but I said, I'm going outside to do this, so start without me.
I've been there.
Cool. They're here on a vacation, or they're here on a little trip, and we went to see the Orioles and the Tigers today in spring training, and John is friends with Brandon Hyde, the manager, and so it was a red carpet treatment type of deal, so it's a good day.
What's it like to be in the Harbaugh family? What's like Christmas like, or a family get-together like?
They don't happen very often. There's way more conversation. Jack and Jackie see everybody, but it's rare that everybody is together. So it is cool, though. It's always fun. It's not stressful. It was stressful after the Super Bowl back in 2013 because that lingered a while, you know, at least about a month, and we were a part of some of that. But it's really cool. I mean, it's such a loving family, and everybody's got kids. And John has one daughter, so they were all together actually the other day because John's daughter graduated from Notre Dame in 3 years and transferred to South Florida to play lacrosse. So John and Ingrid, his wife, flew in with Joni's parents, and I was at ESPN, but Joni met them, so they had some time like that. So it's things like that, but it's rare that it's ever everybody together. Actually, probably really rare. Like it's not an every year type of thing.
You're in a coaching family, and I have to think that probably helped your relationship, that your wife understood kind of coaching and being around sports and being part of it. And you know, the hours and the commitment that it takes, and you know, I think that can't be understated.
No, not at all. But it was totally different for her when we first started dating at Western Kentucky and then got married there, because football, and I knew it, but I didn't really know it, right? So, like, I would get it explained to from her. The football calendar, the football schedule, the football day, just completely night and day different from what basketball was. So that took her some time, especially with the recruiting periods. And that was early on when you were recruiting for, 6 weeks, you know, when we first started dating. You'd go out in June, and it would run through July, and there were very few days off, and you're playing a couple games a week. You know, the football life was so much more structured. Jack knew when he was coming home. He knew when he might be home for dinner and when he was going back. They knew when their vacations would be. But I think it was great for her. And then as we had kids, because Jody's great, great family memories are all those games, all those bowl trips. The stories are still as relevant today that all three of them tell. As they were when they happened, and, you know, usually have Bo Schembechler's involved in them and all those different things. So it's just been awesome for our kids to grow up in that. I mean, our son, Riley, is 25, and he's in his third year with the Mavericks, Dallas Mavericks, as assistant video coordinator and employer development. So, you know, now he's got all that. So it's good to it was hard for her, but she learned to understand it pretty quick, and she was great at it.
Tom Crean with us. You know, I was thinking about you the other day because I was watching Tom Izzo, and, you know, he had a kind of an emotional halftime thing when they played Oregon earlier in the year. And then I remembered, because I covered IU. I was covering Indiana in 98-99. I think you were at Michigan State on Izzo's staff at around that time, and you were recruiting and coaching all the Mateen Cleaves and all those guys. And I remember, you know, those teams were so good. What was it like to be friends with Izzo? I think he might have been in your wedding, too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. I was the first hire that he made when he took over, because Brian Gregory stayed, Stan Joplin stayed, and he brought me in, and I'd been a graduate assistant there in 1989-90. When he was associate head coach, Judd Heathcote was the head coach. So we had a relationship, a friendship. It was incredible. I mean, it really was. That's why this time period has been so great and such a great reflection of those times. And that's why it would have been so ironic if he beat Indiana to set the record, because that was his first game. And I said this a few different times. That first year, we lost to Central Michigan, my old school, on a Friday in our own tournament. and played one more game on a Saturday night, won the consolation game. Turned around, first Big Ten game is Bobby Knight and Indiana, and we win the game. And it was just incredible. And there's a couple watershed moments. Obviously, the first couple years were NIT years. But the Tom Izzo record, from being 4-3, year three, we had just coming off a Saturday night loss to the University of Detroit for the third year in a row at the beginning, so which was crazy. And Perry Watson was the coach then, and we lost those games. And this was pre-internet, this was pre-Twitter, all that, but it was full bore talk radio. And the message boards were coming, but they weren't like they became. But what happened is that with all of that being said, we lost, and like people were like on us, on him. And we go and we beat Wright State on a Wednesday night in the first television game of the entire season, which we had to schedule for ESPN2 to go on the road. We went to South Florida on a Saturday, and we won the game. So you ask what it was like. We had a kid that probably shouldn't have played, and Andre Hudson, that was a key contributor on the Final Four team and on the national championship team, that ended up playing in the game. He was injured. He played. He wanted to play. We drew 7 charges in the game. And Seth Greenberg was the head coach at South Florida at the time. And Tony Dungy was in the stands. George Steinbrenner was in the stands. Wayne Fox, who was coaching the Lions at the time, was in the stands. I mean, it was packed at South Florida because we had to go on the road. I mean, you think about that. And so 10 games in, we're on the road for our first game. We win the game. But the record, Tom Izzo's record from that 4-3 start to where it is now, is as powerful and as strong as could ever possibly be. But you just had to weather it. That's what's so different. And Jay Wright's got those stories, and Mike Krzyzewski's got those stories. Tom Izzo has those stories. You had to weather it. And if people stuck with people long enough, lo and behold, great things could happen.
I wonder, in today's climate, if that's, you know, in the mentality, or do the presidents, do the ADs have the courage to stick with a guy? You know, we just saw Craig Smith at Utah. You know, he gets fired. He's overachieving, I thought, and he's getting fired for it. And, you know, you're watching, you know, maybe this time of year, it's just that time of year. You know, you've been in it as a coach. What is that like to be coaching and knowing, you know, your AD or your president, they're talking over off to the side?
Oh, it's brutal. It's the worst. There's nothing worse. Everything I went through at Indiana in the first 3 years, with everything that we had to repair, rebuild, winning 6 games, it wasn't anything compared to my last 3 years in Indiana. With how, and I'm not talking about fans, I'm talking about in-house. And when you can't trust your administration, and when you forget being aligned, okay, that's the ultimate, when you're aligned. And that's a lot easier said than done. But, you know, when leaks are coming out on things, on injuries and suspensions and all these different things, when you know there is no worse feeling for a coach, no money protects it, No wind protects it. None of it protects it. When you feel like you are in a bad spot and you can't trust the situation that you're in, like the Craig Smith thing, they announced it yesterday, but there's no way that just came up over the last few days. I mean, right? Like those things have been in the works for a while. I mean, you would just think they would. I mean, because you would never just fire somebody after he beats Kansas and Kansas State. So, like, these decisions get made, and I can't imagine how tough that was for him the last few weeks, because I've lived that, and it is brutal. And because very few people, I don't know if it's courage. There's so much about you need to survive, right? Like, you want to protect yourself. And if you have somebody that you're working for that understands injuries, that understands what you're going through, that comes to practice and sees what you're building inside of the players. And it's all different now because you can have the greatest relationship whatsoever with two or three kids. And if you're $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 short of what they can get somewhere else, they're going to leave. And that's just part of it. But if you have somebody that can understand what you're going through, what you're trying to get to, this is why we're in the situation we're in, you know, with the injuries. And I haven't been privileged enough to have that. You know, I had it at Marquette, but I wasn't privileged enough to have that at Indiana at the end. We lost our only senior my last year right after we'd won the Big Ten championship and gone to the Sweet 16. And OG Anunoby, who was a lottery pick at the time, got hurt at Penn State and was out 18 games. And we didn't have enough. And we had another player that had gotten hurt the week before, could play, but really couldn't practice very much. Both of them ended up in the NBA. But I think the hardest thing is you got to have a great staff around you at that point. And it's you're really, really isolated because you're really not sure who you can trust. You're really not sure who you can talk to. And you can just beat yourself up hourly worrying about the stress of the next game, what's going to happen with this. And it's just all you need is some real communication. All you need is to know, hey, this has to happen or I have to make a move or I see what you're doing, but we need to get to this place. You need those benchmarks instead of people running in the office and never coming to see you. And I'm not talking about everybody. I think there's some phenomenal athletic directors and administrations out there. But I'm telling you now, when they decide they want to move, it's a lonely, lonely place, and you worry about everything, starting with your family. But it's a brutal place.
I can remember Mark Helfrich, the Oregon football coach. He had a really tough season. They were like 4-8, you know, looking for a win late. They had a big upset win at Utah late in the year. In the post-game news conference, Coach, there's no Phil Knight. There's no athletic director. I turned to the other reporters and I said, he's done. Like, they're not coming in here to celebrate with him. It's over. Like, you know.
Yeah, the worst.
Yeah, it's just a bad feeling, and you feel for the guy. We're talking to Tom Crean, former coach at Marquette, Indiana, Georgia, now with ESPN. We're watching coaches right now start to tinker with lineups, tighten up lineups, go small in some cases. Boise State, you got Leon playing a freshman for the first time, Peanut Carmichael, who scores 21. Like, what are coaches doing this time of year with tournaments looming in the horizon?
Well, there's more going on than there was before, and I don't know about this at Boise's case because he's got a really good team. But you're finding more people are playing people that they weren't playing because they don't want to lose them. And I don't. And again, I don't think that's Leon's deal at all. And I'm not trying to say that, but it is happening. It's happening around the country, but Leon's right in the hunt. I think you always have got to keep finding an edge for your team. And it's because everybody thinks, well, you know, they're going to leave, and this kid's going to leave, and that kid's going to leave, and those things are going to happen. And the people that know what's going on are the teammates, right? They know. You don't know but as a coach, but your team knows. And so every day that you're coaching them, you have absolutely got to find a way to have an edge that brings them together on the court, right? That brings them together. Yes, you want to have a great practice. Yes, you want to have a really good film session. But you've got to find different things that create some energy in the games, that create a cause. And it's not just, hey, we got to beat team A, team B. That's not just what the cause is anymore. It maybe used to be, but now it's more than that. So you got to find things that really challenge the energy mentally of your team so you can get that physical energy to get them to absolutely lock in and play together. Because there's always been worries on a team. You get to January, you get to February. Seniors are thinking about their future. Freshmen are wondering why they're not playing. Good freshmen, good sophomores, good juniors, they're thinking about going into the draft. And the hardest thing for a team, and we talked about this last year, but the hardest thing for a team to deal with, because it doesn't matter what you think, doesn't matter what I think, doesn't matter what their parents think. I guess it does matter what their parents think, but you've got numerous players on a lot of teams that can run 7, 8 people easy that all think they're going to the same place at the same time, and that's the NBA. And it's just, it's real. It doesn't matter if it's reality. It matters if it's their reality. And you have to deal with that. That is a dilemma that you have to manage. You're never going to solve that. So you have to manage it, and you have to be truthful, and you have to look for other things. So tinkering with lineups, not playing guys that are turning the ball over, taking guys in and out. You're constantly looking for ways to challenge the minds and energy and commitment to one another on the court that night with your team.
Dana Altman and the Ducks go to go on the road. Wisconsin's playing well. They go. They win a game in overtime. This is an Oregon team that just, five, 6 games ago was on a 5-game losing skid. We see Dana do this, and we see veteran coaches do this, and you can feel them getting ready for the conference tournament, getting ready for the postseason. You've been there in that position. How do you kind of manage the art and the science of getting your team playing the best basketball when it matters?
Well, the thing he's had all along is he's had these quad one wins. And so even when they were going through that situation, you hate it, but he knows he's got some stuff in the bank, right? And that's important. I mean, Oregon State is close. I think they're 78. That's almost a quad one win. So now they're sitting at, now they're at 9, but they're really close to 10. So in his situation, it's different. Now, a lot of these guys that don't have quad one wins, it's really different. It's harder. But I think what Dana does, I think what that staff does, they've got a good team. They coach it. They're still tinkering. There's nobody in the country. We can get all the way to the Final Four weekend that isn't trying to develop the chemistry, isn't trying to build even more togetherness, because it can fluctuate. It can be gone in a moment right now. And everybody thinks, well, you know, you're trying to keep them or they're going to leave. No, a bunch of them are going to leave anyways. You just got to keep them together while you have them. And I thought that win at Wisconsin, that may have been one of the 5 best wins of the whole year the other day when they went in there. Because Wisconsin, that is a beast to go in there and win. We only did it one time, and it was at Marquette. It's freaky how hard it is to win in there. And now you throw on the fact that they're shooting 39% from three, leading the country, or leading the Big Ten, I mean. They've got Tanji, who's a legit All-American candidate and Player of the Year candidate. They're shooting the ball at a high level. And they just go in there and they get it done. And they get it done with double-figure scoring. They get it done with moving the lineup around. They get it done with KJ Evans. I think he's had a lot to do with why they're on a good jump right now because he's improved and playing well. But they found ways to get it done. And it was like, I said this on the air, it was like a blueprint win for them. It wasn't conventional in how they got there, but it was conventional in how they did it. They shared the ball. Shellstad was good. Biddle showed what he's capable of. KJ Evans played at a level that they need from him. Bartholomew was really good. We can go right on down the line. And I don't even think did Brandon even score in that game?
I don't know. Yeah, if he did, it wasn't much, but it was Biddle and Shellstad hit the big shot and then Biddle carried him.
Biddle was unbelievable. Yeah. But he's capable of that. And he was deserved it. See, but it's like anything else. Oregon's a great example. That's why what they've done with the wins is unreal, because they have been inconsistent at times, just like almost everybody else is. But everybody goes through it. You know, it just becomes a matter, do you escape with the wins or do you get beat? And it's happening to everybody. Auburn's been escaping with some wins. When I came out here, Florida was down 12-3. I don't even know what it is right now to Georgia. It can happen on any night. I mean, Alabama goes in and gets popped by Missouri. They come back and they They win on Saturday. So many against Kentucky. Everybody goes through it. Duke maybe not as much because of the league.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is coaching more than ever now. It's not about overcoaching. It's about having a pulse every day for what is needed with your team that day. And that's why the lineup changes, the adding new things, the all that stuff matters right now because you're trying to keep their attention.
Georgia up 16 with 3 minutes to go in the first half. Number three, Florida there, as you say that. Perfect example of that. Let me ask you one last one. I'll let you get back to dinner. St. Mary's is in an interesting spot. Randy Bennett does a great job. They're the regular season champ for the second time in the WCC. Gonzaga's leaving in 26. St. Mary's has expressed some interest in joining that New World Pac-12 in a basketball capacity. Or do they stay in the WCC and just try to dominate the competition there? You got a thought on that, Coach?
I haven't really till you brought it up, but I think they're so good and they've become such brand that I'm not sure I would leave. You know, how many more bids is the other league going to be?
Yeah.
And that's the thing you got to look at. And if you've got a league right now and you're happy with what you have, and you're comfortable with that, and you've got people coming in, and you've still got the European connections. Like, you think Arizona wouldn't like to have him back? I mean, it's just crazy how they're good. I mean, this year, they are so good, right? Because they've got such quickness and things like that. So to me, I'm not sure I'd leave. I think that's a pretty good niche. And especially with the way they're winning now, I might sit right there.
Be the big fish in the small pond and get to the tournament every year.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Absolutely.
Go have dinner.
You're still going to have a great schedule.
Yeah. What did you order? Did you order already? Or am I holding you up?
Yeah. When I get here, it's a great – I get a pepperoni pizza. I eat about four slices and take the rest home for 2 days.
I love it. So,
All right, I'm routine.
All right. Thanks for joining us. Always appreciate you.
Anytime. Thanks.
All right. There he goes. Tom Crean. He married into the Harbaugh family. Former coach, now with ESPN. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth.